Elsa.
You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Country Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
JD.
Hey, Bo. Good afternoon, man.
Good afternoon to you too, sir. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's evening-ish. The evening is upon us. You know, it's kind of that afternoon.
It's afternoon. Yeah. And it's a little overcast outside, so it feels nighttime-ish.
I mean, we're cozying up with some tea, some good conversation.
Yeah.
No, it's a good time. It's
a good feeling.
It's that afternoon pipe. You know, you had the early morning pipe. You had the evening pipe. Did anybody ever do a blend that was like an afternoon pipe?
I'm sure they did at some point.
Yeah. If not, maybe there might be something to it.
Jeremy,
get on it, Quinn.
If you're listening.
Oh, yeah, Jeremy. Yeah,
Quinn,
yeah.
Quinn, or, you know, someone. Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be great. Man, we are here and bringing you these fine episodes because of the support of our amazing club members and patrons. Man, we got some folks to shout out joining at the Patreon level. And you know what? I got to say, before I even attempt this, we generally butcher the names of our club members. We try to like reserve that honor of having your name absolutely destroyed on this podcast for our club members. And for the patrons, we, of course, give them a shout out, give them a nod without butchering their name, because that is kind of, you know, it's an unwritten kind of benefit of being a club member.
Right.
That being said, I think patron DeGeorgi Ivanov may have just gotten the added benefit of me butchering their name without trying to.
I think his or her parents just kind of made that happen.
DeGeorgi, thank you so much
when he was born.
Supporting
and, you know,
this
we're thankful
show.
For DeGeorgi and Ivanov. I'm pretty confident in the last name, Ivanov.
Joining at the Squire level, though, we have Jason Breeden.
Right. Jason Breeden.
Thank you so much
thank
for your
you
support.
Thank you so much. Yes.
And then finally, man, also at the Squire level, we've got
Zacchaeus. Oh, it's like Zacchaeus.
He was a wee little man, but he became a squire of the Country Squire International Pipe Club.
Isn't that something?
Zacchaeus, thank you for that.
Oh,
you are not a wee little man to us. I just want you to know that.
No.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Thank you so much for your support.
Our house is built upon your efforts.
All right, man. We've got a great episode. I've been looking forward to this one.
Yeah,
over
me too,
last couple
man.
Of weeks,
me too.
Yeah, man. Over the last couple of weeks, we've been really getting a little introspective a little bit, I think, about kind of conversations of things like integrity, kind of community. We've been talking about pipe as artistry and kind of the responsibility that exists there. And I feel like an unintentional trilogy of episodes has occurred over the last 2 weeks as we've done kind of the integrity conversation, gone into kind of the pipe and modern artistry. And now as we find ourselves in this half bowl histories, we're going to be talking about a group of folks that really embody, I think, for many of the Country Squire Radio listeners, you know, maybe even if you don't necessarily see yourself in the imagery of these individuals, I think the spirit of what they represented is something that all of us kind of long for. And so we're going to be doing a half bowl histories. Now, what is a half bowl history? This is where we talk about an individual, perhaps a place or something more of history of note. It doesn't necessarily mean a hero per se as something that we've kind of, you know, quantified that as a past.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily a pirate. We've done a lot of pirates and pipe tobaccos. But this is just somebody or something of note in history that is especially potentially interesting to those of us in the pipe community, pipe smokers that find kind of a connection to. And suffice to say, I think we've got a group of individuals that pipe smokers will definitely want to learn a little bit more about and definitely can share a kinship with. John David, let me cast your mind back, okay? The year is 1931.
Okay.
You are at Oxford University's University College.
Hmm.
And your name is Tangy.
Tangy?
Well, maybe it's Tangy.
Tangy?
Tangy? Your name is Tangy.
Tangy.
Your name is Tangy. Edward Tangy Lean, to be precise, but you're at Oxford University.
Okay, okay.
1931. You have these desires to be a writer, and your name is Tangy. And you have stacks, John David Tangy. You've got stacks of all these unfinished works. You're trying to keep up. You're trying to do a good job. You need what all of us need in college. You need community and you need some help. So you start reaching out to your buddies. You got this one buddy, Clive, and you got this other buddy, John, and you've got a couple of other buddies. And you say to Clive and John, hey guys, I got these stacks of writings. They've been building up. I was wondering, can I read some of these to you? If you've got stacks of writings, maybe you can read yours.
Yeah.
We'll start reading each other's writings and we'll try to like...
Let's sharpen each other's stuff.
And sharpen each stuff. Let's survive freaking college together.
Together, right.
Exactly.
We're at freaking Oxford.
Absolutely. And so, you know, John and Clive were like, hey, you know, that's cool. We'd love to do that. We like writing. We like reading stuff. And, you know, we all kind of like hanging out with each other. Why don't we do this? We'll all get together. We'll all work and kind of survive undergraduate college together. And what are we going to call ourselves? Well, let's come up with a clever name. We're all trying to write all this stuff down. We're trying to ink it together, and we have kind of an inkling of what we want to do with it. Let's call ourselves the Inklings. Now, as you go through school and everything else, Tangy, John David, you know, you survive, you make it out, and you go on, and you're really excited about your career because you're going to be a writer. Not only that, you're going to be a writer of history, and you're going to be really excited to go out and write history. So you launch yourself out into the world, and you get a phone call, because I guess maybe that can happen in 1931. I don't know what the technology was back then.
Right.
You get a message.
There's a carrier pigeon.
From your boys, Clive and John. They're like, hey, Tangy, we really appreciate, you know, the college was fun. Thank you so much for that. We got this other group of guys that we're chilling out with. We're kind of doing the same type of thing. We're reading each other's stuff. We're having a good time, smoking pipes, drinking beers. We kind of want to like carry on the name of the Inklings, even though it's a kind of a different group. Are you cool with that? And man, Tangy's like, you know what? Yeah, y'all take the name the Inklings. You know, people aren't even going to remember that name. You go crazy. I've got big plans. I'm going to go write for a history magazine called ISIS. And trust me, I'd much rather be associated with ISIS than I would.
You have got to be kidding.
That would the Inklings.
So old Tangy.
Old Tangy
was like, nah, y'all take the Inklings name.
I'm gonna go join ISIS. which was a history magazine for Oxford University in 1931.
That is amazing.
So anyway, it's one of these situations where you're doing the research. I don't know if you heard me earlier, like just bust out laughing is when I realized that this was the case. I was like, oh, this is,
and that's what this, that was that, that's what this was about.
That's
okay.
Right. It's kind of like on Downton Abbey.
That's funny.
When they killed ISIS on Downton Abbey, but ISIS was the name of the dog.
But ISIS was the lab.
Or was the golden retriever.
Labradoodle or whatever. Yeah.
So anyway, so now you've got
that's
these
so
two
funny.
You've got these two dudes, John and Clive. Now you may know them a little bit better as J.R.R. Tolkien and C.S. Lewis, right?
So Tangy's out of the picture.
Tangy's out of the picture.
He joined ISIS.
He went to go join ISIS to write about history. And you got John and Clive. They've met up with a bunch of other folks. They've carried on the name. Now, it should be noted that Tolkien himself later said that although our habit was to read aloud compositions of various kinds and lengths, the association and the habit, the practice itself, would in fact have come into being at that time, whether or not the original short-lived club had ever existed or not. So basically what he's saying is that, you know, while the original Inklings that they were a part of in college, you know, yes, that inspired the name, and yes, it was a similar practice. This secondary group, the one that is actually more commonly known,
right,
would have probably come about. It might have had a different name, but it was going to happen organically one way or the other.
Just because these are guys that, I guess, wanted to support each other, were familiar with each other. All that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, and these were guys that were operating on the highest level of academia. You and I would not be welcome in this group. You know what I mean? Like in terms of like they were debating and could like tell jokes in alternate languages and that sort
right,
of thing. And
I'm
not talking Klingon. I'm talking like, you know, they were talking in Latin and French and like all of these different languages, but then also Klingon and Elvish and whatnot.
Right.
You know, the Klingon of its day, if you will. So, you know, these were like these hardcore nerds, but not nerds in the sense, but in like the extreme academic sense.
Right.
And, you know, just to kind of read
brilliant minds.
Absolutely. To put it another way, C.S. Lewis's brother once said that the Inklings was neither a club nor a literary society, though it partook of the nature of both. There were no rules, there were no offices, there were no agendas, there were no formal elections. This was a group of individuals, friends, colleagues that came together and kind of organically did this practice without having any kind of formalized creation of a group.
Just the planets aligned kind of thing.
Absolutely. So who were the Inklings? Who were members of this organization? So I'm going to read off some of these names here. Some folks may be familiar to you, some not as much so. You had Owen Barfield. You had Jack A.W. Bennett. You had Lord David Cecil. You had Neville Conghill. You had Hugo Dyson, Adam Fox, Robert Harvard, C.S. Lewis, Warren Lewis, C.S. Lewis's brother, J.R.R. Tolkien, Christopher Tolkien, Tolkien's son, Charles Williams. You also had James Dunson Grant, Colin Hardy, Gervis Matthew, R.B. McCallum, Edward Stevens, John Wayne, Charles Leslie Wren. You know, they had guests that would come in like Ray Campbell or E.R. Edison. So this was a group of rotating individuals over the course of essentially two decades, right, that have kind of existed. I believe, and I could be wrong, the kind of the only member that was kind of pretty much throughout, although he may have stepped back from time to time, but if you look at from beginning to end, was C.S. Lewis.
Okay.
And so all of these other individuals were kind of invited into this space and encouraged to be there. And I love what these guys really represented to each other as they kind of challenged each other in their writings. For example, Henry Victor Dyson, H.V.D. Dyson, for example, he was an English academic, and also one of, you know, notable because him along with Tolkien were responsible for, you know, converting Lewis to Christianity.
Yeah, yeah.
Dyson, this is a great little anecdote. Dyson was more of a speaker lecturer than a writer. He was much more preferred to talk at these Inkling meetings as opposed to people writing different things and reading off their writings. And Christopher Tolkien once said that he remembered Dyson as lying on the couch, lolling and shouting and saying, "Oh God, not another elf," during the Lord of the Rings. Dyson was hardly alone in his distaste, by the way, of Tolkien's stories, and eventually Tolkien quit reading them to the group, although, but also it seemed like Dyson, according to C.S. Lewis's letters, seemed to be the most fun-loving and a little bit more laid-back of the group from that standpoint.
Yeah.
But I love the idea of J.R.R.
Not
Tolkien
another elf.
Sitting
God.
Here reading, it's like, oh God, not another elf.
That's fantastic.
But they're crafting mythology. They're crafting narrative. And every single one of these guys, from the speakers to the theologians to the writers, all of these guys care deeply about story.
Yeah.
They care deeply about challenging and defining and creating narrative and myth. And like, you know, so it was not just about like the literary practice of getting things grammatically correct. It was about the world building and exploring stories and characters and having these deep conversations that took place in alternate universes as they're sitting there enjoying pipes, enjoying good beer, enjoying good food, and enjoying the fellowship of one another. Tolkien in particular spoke at some of his time in these meetings where he would share about trying to discover his own stories. Like when he found Aragorn in the pub in Bree, he was just as surprised as Frodo was to see him sitting in the corner.
Yeah.
Anyone that's ever been a storyteller knows this feeling.
Interesting.
You know, I referenced last week, you know, with kind of the pirate's daughter and the story that I've been kind of working on in that regard. I remember very specifically there's a scene and that kind of came to me as I was actually running at the time, where, you know, the main character, Stella, the pirate's daughter, there's a moment that takes place kind of in the second season volume of the story, whatever you want to call it, where she's standing there in a boat and she's trying to get away. She's just helped sack this town and she gives the opposition a moment to fire on her before she basically blows up the ship that they're in. And I'm like, I thought it was the most bizarre thing. Why would this woman give these people a chance to kill her?
Yeah, do that.
And right. I realized, I think she wants to die. I think there's a part of her who wants to die. You know, so my point is that this is a fictional character that I've created, but when you create a world so well and the characters
they
so well,
still surprise
they surprise you. And so Tolkien in this group with these guys, as they're kind of like exploring different narrative facets and different writings and different poetry and different theological concepts, they're doing so with this space, allowing each other their fantasies. You know what I mean? Like nobody's calling that out as stupid.
Right.
They're all being invited into the moment to embrace that. I think that's fantastic. And I think that is a really like a beautiful thing that honestly I long for. I long for kind of a community. Like I think we all long for a community like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
These were Anglicans, these were Catholics, they were agnostics. They would all get together and they would converse. You know, I mentioned specifically in regards to Dyson and Tolkien were responsible for converting Lewis to Christianity. Lewis, you know, he loved mythology. And what Tolkien and Dyson were able to do is kind of some of these discussion points were kind of point out to him, you know, mythology is beautiful. It has all this truth. But the great thing about Christianity, about the story of Jesus, this is a true myth. Like this has all the tenets of mythology. This has all of the points. You have your hero. They're all pointing kind of in this monomyth to Christ, and Christ is the true myth. This is what they kind of challenged Lewis with. I think it spoke to who Lewis was, and it invited him to explore the kind of the message of Jesus, the story of Jesus through this kind of context of a true mythology. Mm. That's beautiful.
That is beautiful.
And you think about this too. At this time, the 30s, 1930s, all these guys coming together and they're all debating things furiously. Like, these were people that were constantly challenging each other's beliefs, wrestling with them, being willing to trade blows and kind of give each other room to, you know, express without trying to shut them down or trying to, like, you know, cancel them or something of that nature. You know what I mean? Like, there was the space to do this. But at the same time, even amidst their disagreements, they all championed each other. They all wanted each one another to succeed despite their disagreements. I wrote this down as I was kind of like thinking through like who these guys were and what kind of they represented, but it was respect in the face of disagreement. It was brotherhood in the face of challenges and ultimately a desire for each other to succeed. This is just something that we lose in the modern context because we've gone to digital spaces to find our community. We've gone to like Twitter and Facebook and all these like shouting matches where you just shut people down or you put yourselves in these bubbles where you're only surrounded with people that agree with you. And you're not like going into people and you're not, even when you go into people that you disagree with, you're only going there to get mad at them or to make them get mad at you. And then you write them off and then, you know, whatever. Everybody bubbles up in their own thing.
The silo.
It's a problem globally in our society where we are constantly bubbling up like that.
So does this kind of safe environment where people have the ability to push and pull and be heard without, you know, initial litmus tests or any kind of stuff, like where does this exist in our modern context? Is there a place that this exists in the modern context, or is it just kind of a lost art?
I think it's a little bit both and, right? So I do think that it's a lost art, but I think it can exist. I think the country squire has been that at times. Yeah. And I think that many folks with, you know, a really quality kind of pipe shop type experience have been able to enjoy that.
To experience that. Yeah.
Put a pipe in your mouth. Shut up for 5 seconds and listen to somebody. I don't care if you disagree with them. I don't care if you think what they're saying is crazy. Listen to the truth, the heart of what they're trying to say, and respect that individual for being somebody worthy of hearing what they're saying. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, hopefully they will offer you the same regard, but you do the first step of giving them that space.
And if
they don't return the favor, that's okay. But like you got to pay it. You got to invest in giving people that space.
Yeah.
And also opening yourself up to not writing them off. Oh, I disagree with what you said on this, so I'm going to write you off on everything else. No. Listen to what they're saying.
Yeah.
Listen to the core of what they're trying to communicate. Because even if you disagree with the way they're saying it, there's probably something, some truth in there and something that you need to learn.
And at least honor the vulnerability of, you know, people taking those steps to be authentic.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
But let's talk about space, man, because the Inklings themselves, man, this is just freaking legendary. They would all get together at a location called the Eagle and Child Pub. Okay. This was a kind of...
Could you imagine naming a bar nowadays, the Eagle and Child?
Let me ask you this. When do you think it got the name Eagle and Child?
Probably like the 1850s or something.
Kick it on back, my brother. This is 1650s.
Golly, that's amazing.
It's a small, narrow building that was built in the 1650s. The first record of the pub's name is actually 1684.
That's amazing.
We're talking about an institution where, you know, the origins of why this was called the Eagle and Child, or commonly known as the Bird and Baby, but the Eagle and Child, like, people don't know why it was called that. There's a lot of theories. One of them is that it was derived from the story of Ganymede and being abducted by Zeus, who had turned himself into an eagle. There's one that is from the crest of the Earl of Derby, that perhaps they kind of took some imagery there and named it after that. There's also a story, kind of a legendary story, of a noble born baby that was found in an eagle's nest. Any one of these could be accurate in terms, or all of them wrong, in terms of why on earth they decided to name this pub
the Eagle and Child.
The Eagle and Child. But it was commonly referred to from the folks that went there as the Bird and Baby, as kind of like a, you know, a joke type name, if you will. The Eagle and Child was first modernized in 1962, and pub at that time, they were trying to extend it out. Now, this was a pretty challenging moment for the Inklings because they'd been going here, and specifically in a little room called the Rabbit Room. They liked the Rabbit Room because it allowed for some privacy. It had, you know, it had kind of the tavern, the type pub type feel. There was this little room in the back, a really cool room.
Have you been there?
I've not been there, but I've seen images of it.
Yeah.
And I want to. It's definitely on my to go list.
No kidding.
But the Rabbit Room, you know, was a nice little room that was kind of off to the side. So you could have all these gentlemen going in there. Passersby would have thought all these people hated each other. They were, you know, debating, arguing
and stuff. Yeah,
absolutely. But they had that privacy to do that. When they modernized, when the Bird and Baby decided to modernize and expand, this caused a little bit of a problem because the Rabbit Room opened up. And so now it was part of the rest of the pub. And the Inklings had to make the very hard decision to actually find a new location so that they could maintain the privacy of their conversations.
Right, right.
Right. So they literally went to across the street to a pub called The Lamb and Flag.
Lamb and Flag?
You just pick two things.
I know.
You know, that's what the Brits did. They just picked two things.
The chicken and rattlesnake.
These days, the Lamb and Flag and the Eagle and Child, both still there, are owned, I think, by the same group.
The Lamp and Gerbil.
Right. However, despite its epic long run, the Eagle and Child did have to close down for some time in the year 2020. And since then,
pandemic
has remained closed because they are turning it into a hotel. However, they are maintaining the Rabbit Room in its original condition. So the idea is that you might be able to stay at the hotel and everything else, but the Rabbit Room, this epic location where the Inklings met.
Such a historic, monumental place. Yeah.
Right.
Will still be a part of the facility. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, I need to make mention of this.
The old turtle and broom. Two objects.
I think it's honestly, it's kind of a cool name. You know what I mean? Like,
I
tell you what, man, a good Tolkien Lewis inspired pipe tobacco called the Bird and Baby wouldn't be too bad.
The Bird and Baby, yeah.
I think that'd be pretty cool. But I got to make mention of one other thing, you know, because I'm thinking about these guys. They're all getting together. They're all having these conversations. And one of the things I really love is, like I said, they wanted each other to succeed despite their disagreements. You know what I mean? And they were also willing to be persuaded with people they disagreed with. You know what I mean? Like you think about, like, again, I think Lewis's conversion is actually a really good example of this.
It's that open mind.
It's the open mind
kind of thing. And being willing to listen to your heart.
Right. And Lewis didn't convert to Catholicism. He became an Anglican. You know what I mean? It's not like he like went all the way over to
what an idiot. I'm just kidding.
But, you know, so it's really interesting. There's a Lewis wrote in Owen Barfield's book.
Yeah.
He wrote of him, he said, you know, to Owen Barfield, one of my best teachers, one of my greatest teachers.
Yeah.
Barfield returned the favor by saying, opposition is true friendship.
Wow.
I think that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Because like it's the recognition. I remember, I'll never forget, in a very different Oxford than the one that we've been referring to. I spent a summer with a friend of mine, and I remember him once sharing with me, he said, you know, I don't think I could really ever be lifelong friends with somebody I've never had an argument with. And I remember, I thought that was so bizarre.
Wow, that's interesting.
But I've come to really appreciate that and understand that, because arguments and disagreement are that moment where you decide if you're going to like cut somebody off and move on.
Right.
Or if you're going to love them and stick with them, like, and
through
work,
it.
Work on the friendship, because relationships take work. These gentlemen all represent the work of relationship as they're also pushing themselves to achieve greater. Like, we're talking about some of the greatest literary minds of their time.
That's wild.
You know what I mean?
I've never really thought about that. That is a profound concept. I mean, like, can you really be friends, intimate friend, with someone if there hasn't been some type of struggle?
Yeah.
You know, that's a good question.
I'm going to go here. It's one of the reasons why ours is one of the most defining friendships of my life.
Yeah.
Because of this podcast and because of what it's represented to both of us, like at times a need, we've never shared this before. But I mean, like, we've wrestled. Like, our friendship has been tested and struggled over the years in different facets.
Yeah.
But it's been refined because of it.
Right.
And one of the great things, it's interesting because I was thinking about it, like, you know,
that's so interesting.
It's important that people know, as we kind of look to the next few weeks here, as we're closing down this podcast, we're not closing on bad terms. You know what I mean? Like, the nice thing is we don't leave because like we're parting ways. We had opportunities for that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like we had tense moments.
That's so 2015.
Right. But the thing is, like, it's the relationships that you have where you work. And I want to say this, because I really value our friendship, and I want to challenge the listener to value the people you disagree with or that you may have to work through some stuff.
Yeah.
Because what you get from doing that is refined. Same thing with your marriage.
Yeah.
You don't just bail when things get tough. You work through it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. What is family if not relationships that require working through that stuff?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think what these gentlemen represented in the Inklings, like we could talk about all of their amazing literary works and all of their different theological hot takes and this, that, and the other, and the way they really got into like the deepness of even just the general concept of the abstract concept of love and what that represents. Like there's just all these different like angles that you can kind of like approach these guys. I think as pipe smokers, I think as a Country Squire radio community, as we kind of enter into these last couple of weeks of this show,
yeah, the twilight,
and what this community has been, I want to challenge us. There has been there are pockets in the pipe community that try to paint pipedom in one very specific mindset, or like, this is what a pipe smoker today looks like, sounds like, believes, thinks. We all think this stuff. We all think this, that, or the other. Like, no.
That's no fun.
It's no fun. It's not accurate. The reality is pipe smokers, and we've seen this. We have seen this. Pipe smokers are diverse. They're diverse in their beliefs, in the way they look, where they come from, their socioeconomic status. They're diverse in what drives them. They could have very widely, and they do, they've got widely diverging political the beliefs and everything else. But here, can we not, what we have tried to do here at Country Squire Radio is hold a place where all of you have come. It's been challenging at times because world has been challenging over the last couple of years.
But it's
especially
worth it.
It's worth it because we have to have the burden baby. We have to have the eagle and child. We have to have the Country Squire. We have to have a place where we can all come and have pipe tobacco and listen for a minute and respect each other. Fight for the ability for your opponent to get their word in rather than for your own self to get yours in. When you advocate for your brother, regardless of whether or not you believe in what he's saying,
right.
Advocate for him to have a moment, have a stance, work through those things, think through those things. Then you can wrestle with them together.
Yeah.
Don't be so focused on being proven right, changing their mind or otherwise. Like, demonstrate what it means to love in that way, to listen in that way. And when you find yourself wanting to just like shut somebody down because you don't like what they're saying or this, that, or the other, or you find yourself thinking about them in a kind of way because you think of like their beliefs and this, that, pack your pipe, take a puff, contemplate, rest, think. Some of the greatest literary minds and writers and thinkers of the day, this is what they did. They gave each other space. They challenged each other. I'm not saying don't challenge each other and don't work through things. You should. That's important. But do so in respect and in brotherhood. And if we can do that, you know what I mean? I'm not saying we're going to save all Western civilization. But what I'm saying is if we can do that, then the spirit of the Inklings can live on in the modern day pipe smoker. And that's where I feel like this unintentional trilogy of these three episodes, these last past 3 weeks kind of comes together. And anyway, that's the Inklings, man. That's the Inklings. And I think there's a message that the Inklings have for us in the modern era.
Man, pass the plate.
It did get a little preachy there, didn't it?
No, I mean, it's good.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. And you know what else is good?
Missouri Meerschaum.
Missouri Meerschaum. Oh, man. Look, we love our good friends at Missouri Meerschaum. You talk about some good quality. You know, this is why, by the way, I always keep a jar of Missouri Meerschaum pipes at my house. Is because I like inviting different people over and I like being able to have conversations over pipes. And sometimes it's a way where people who either didn't bring their pipe or have never smoked a pipe before.
Yeah.
You got a big bushel of Missouri Meerschaum pipes. They're ready to go. It's not too expensive to have. And not only can you have some great, you know, corn cob pipes for yourself, but you also have them that you can share with others and kind of be able to enjoy that sense of brotherhood amongst each other. So yeah, in the spirit of the Inklings, I implore all of you, go out to get not one, not two, but a whole handful of good quality corn cob pipes from our friends at Missouri Meerschaum. So the next time you've got all of your buddies together and you're ready to enjoy some lively conversation, you'll be good to go. It's a great way to let the good folks at Missouri Meerschaum know we appreciate them for sponsoring this show.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Pipe question of the week.
Pipe question this week coming in from Gabriel Roper, who writes in saying, "Good morning, gentlemen. I have a pipe question for you. How does, if it actually does, the chamber size and shape affect the burn and smoking characteristics of the tobacco? Blessings, Gabriel Roper." So he's talking about the bowl, right?
Yeah, the chamber of the bowl. So the inside of the bowl, like how does the size and shape of that affect how the tobacco smokes? Great question. You know,
absolutely.
We talked about this in some of the earliest episodes of Country Squire Radio. It's been years ago. But, you know, when you have a more open, wider chamber, you've got, obviously, there's more oxygen that's flowing into the bowl from outside as you're puffing your pipe. And so a lot of folks, when they, you know, have bowls like that, they like to smoke English-style blends, something with a chunkier cut, cube-cut tobacco, or a kind of a chop, you know, squarish cut that's bulkier. It's good for tobaccos like that because they need more surface area. They need a little more oxygen to kind of get them stoked up a little bit. A narrow, taller bowl, we see a lot of times that you're letting in less oxygen into the bowl as you're puffing the pipe. A lot of times folks think these are good for Virginia blends. You know, they're going to let that bowl kind of cool down a little bit. You don't have to work as hard to keep it lit. You know, there's just a good interplay there with the volume of air that's coming in related to the tobacco. And so it helps the synergy of that tobacco. It doesn't burn as hot, all those kind of things. It helps the sugars kind of bake in there in a way that is different. And so that's kind of the idea. You know, some people will even narrow it down further and they'll say, well, I like a bowl that's drilled this way or drilled that way. As in, do you like a bowl that has kind of a conical shape or almost like a V shape inside the chamber? Or do you like something that's hollowed out real deep and broad, you know, like a big deep bowl, you know, like a big deep saucepan or something that just is very wide and open like that? It just depends on, you know, how you smoke your pipe and the tobaccos you prefer, the type of cuts you like. I tend to smoke more ribbon cut tobacco that, you know, is better for a more of a narrow bowl. But I've gotten to where I enjoy larger bowl pipes, particularly for you know, those chunkier tobaccos that require a little more real estate. So yeah, it's a great question.
That's a great question, Gabriel. Thank you so much for that. It's a classic question too. I feel like it has been asked before. One of the things I think we've really enjoyed over the course of this series is being able to, like, the pipe question in general has been an opportunity to allow for us to, like, revisit some of these questions in the past, because we always have new listeners that are coming in, and it's always great to get those. So thank you so much for that, Gabriel.
Yeah.
Your thoughts, your comments, listener feedback.
Listener feedback. This one's coming in from Antoine Butler. "Hey guys, I'm a huge fan of Pirates and Tobacco series. November 3rd, I was on a cruise to Nassau, Bahamas." Dude, seriously?
Apparently.
Yeah, he said where the pirate museum. Yeah, there's an amazing pirate museum. I've never been there. That's
awesome.
That's on my bucket list for sure. He said it was amazing. As walked around the island, got to learn a lot about pirate history while puffing on my cob with Captain Black. I was amazed. It was amazing. I'm downloading and listening to all the pirates and pipe tobacco episodes on the plane ride. Good job, guys. Can't wait to hear more. I love this, man. Antoine, thank you so much for sending this.
Yeah, it's awesome. He's really connected with them.
He also sent a picture. I'm remembering now the email. He sent a picture of himself, I think, on the boat and everything.
Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I didn't realize there was a pirate museum, but of course there's a pirate museum.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And NASA, of course it's in the Bahamas.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's basically the pirate capital of the world right there in terms of the Golden Age. So, yeah, that's awesome.
That's cool.
I'm glad. You know, we got so many different folks who wrote in kind of complimenting that series and who just had a fun time with it. I got to tell y'all, that meant a lot to me. I enjoyed doing all of those different characters and individuals. And, you know, it's interesting because as we were recording our last recording retreat, when we were doing those, we knew we weren't ready to share it yet, but we knew that the show was coming to a close. So it very much was a bucket list item for me of like, I want to do, you know, I want to make sure to do a Mary Read. I want to make sure to do Blackbeard. And I was like, Blackbeard, he was kind of my barbecue and pipe tobacco. It's like I'm saving him for when I know it's the last
one. Things are nigh.
That was so much fun. Yeah. Thank you so much for that, Antoine. Appreciate that. Also, we got one in from Dwayne Dunn. What did Dwayne have to say?
Dwayne says, with all the pirate-themed episodes you're doing, I thought you might like to listen to Ailstorm. They are a Scottish pirate metal band. I recommend Keelhauled and Hangover to start. Not pipe related, but it is pipe adjacent. Thanks for what you do. I love the podcast and really hope to make a pilgrimage one day. A little planning coming from Ireland, but you never know. Cheers. And that's from Dwayne. Dwayne, thank you so much.
Absolutely. I have heard of these guys, and people have actually, whenever, you know, occasionally I'll jump on the YouTube channel and kind of do a little live hangout type deal. And folks have actually recommended it to me there as well. I'm familiar with them. I'm not big into the metal scene personally. There's no judgment. Yeah. I know a lot of people like that. It's just not my personal thing. I will say Patty Gertie is somebody that I really enjoy in terms of, like, you know, pirate era-esque kind of musical instruments and that sort of thing, and doing sea shanty inspired music, or at least from a Scottish Irish twist, as opposed to like more of the kind of classic Americana roots of sea shanty. So anyway, you know, I geek out about this stuff. John Davis got this look at me like, yeah, okay.
Bo's having a moment, and I'm proud for him. Yeah, I'm proud for him.
That's great. Thank y'all so much for that. We really appreciate you. So, man, we've got one more episode next week before the big part two finale in the following weeks. We got a couple more weeks. You know, it's so interesting because, you know, as we kind of sit and we record all these, we're kind of processing this together. And I'm glad that we're getting a chance to do that, because it's spread out over the last, you know, couple of months. And then, like, even like right now, as we're kind of enjoying this, we got almost another month worth of shows before it's all said and done. But man, we are right here. So
it's a celebration. It's a grieving. It's a looking forward to what's next. It's wonderful.
Yeah. I don't know. I do wonder if like the listeners are kind of tired of us waxing poetic a little bit about it. And they're just like, guys, just do the show. You know, like, just do the show.
Well, they can deal with it, because I got to deal with this.
I know, right? It's like you got to deal with us, all the emotions.
Oh, y'all are gracious to us. Absolutely. Are gracious to us.
Well, hey, man. The Inklings. I think it's the perfect Half Bowl Histories to kind of close out the series.
Yeah.
I think about, you know, what the histories of the bowl, Heroes of the Bowl, rather, have been as kind of the precursor to what the series kind of evolved into.
That's right.
All of it. You know, we've done C.S. Lewis, we've done Tolkien in there, but to be able to kind of revisit those two individuals, but not just them, but the group that they were a part of, and really what the spirit of what we want Country Squire Radio to be, what it was from day one, I think is embodied in the Inklings. And, you know, so I think it's just the perfect way to close out that series.
Let's carry it forward, man. Yep.
Absolutely. Well, hey, let's go have a day.
See you, brother.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at HereYouAreAZ.com.